Why don't we go ahead and get started? Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Lord's Day. Hopefully everyone had fun yesterday celebrating 250 years of the USA. Today we're going to switch gears and we're going to look at the old law, which is approximately 3,500 years old. Okay, so old because it is old, right? Okay, so last week we started sacrifices. We almost finished the section. We'll finish it today. And then Florence had a really good question that I researched and I'll address today. And then we'll move into the next section of the law of sacrifices, which are the other two sacrifices we haven't spoken about. So just as a quick review, the ones that we talked about last week were the burnt offering, the grain, meal, and drink offering, and the peace or fellowship offering. So just a really fast review. The burnt offering, the animal was put on the altar, and 100% of it was burned except for the hide or the leather. The priest kept that. It was continual, and the fire was always burning, and they typically had two lambs, one in the morning and one in the evening. The other one was the meal and drink offering. This one we talked about fine flour, oil, and frankincense. It had to be unleavened, and it must have salt. And then the last one was the peace or fellowship offering. It was an animal sacrifice put on the altar. This one was a male or a female. Little different distinction there. And all three of these, the purpose is not stated in the Bible. We can only imply things based on when they did them, but it's not stated. And the ultimate result is that it provided a soothing aroma or satisfaction to God for these three. So we'll go ahead and start now with that review. We'll start with the end of the peace or fellowship offering. And so the peace and fellowship offering, it also allowed for a male or a female animal. Again, they had to be perfect, no defects. It talks about the herd, the flock, and the goats. And this is all found in Leviticus chapter 3. And then Leviticus chapter 3, it talks about the details of what's to be burned. I think we read it last week. I'll read it one more time. Leviticus 3, verses 3 and 4. From the sacrifice of the peace offerings, he shall present an offering by fire to the Lord, the fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is on the entrails, and the two kidneys with the fat that is on them, which is on the loins, and the lobe of the liver, which he shall remove the kidneys. So again, God is very detailed, very specific about what, how to do this and what to do it. Remember, Leviticus is a book, it's a handbook for the priests. And so that priests needed to be told what to do. And this is the means for which God told them what to do. Yeah, it must have salt. Must have salt, yes. Unleavened with no honey allowed, because we talked about it could spoil otherwise and change the composition of the sacrifice, and it must have salt. Good question. Yeah, I've talked to a couple. I've talked to a couple people about this class, and I think we're all, even myself studying it, I think we're all thinking about things we hadn't really thought of before. And so that, to me, is spiritual growth. And that's really what we're trying to do. But to be honest, what we're trying to do is prepare ourselves for one thing, so that we can read the book of Hebrews and that we could fully understand and appreciate the book of Hebrews. That's going to be a class coming up at the end, and hopefully we'll have a much better appreciation after going through all these details. All right, so the blood was handled in the same manner as the burnt offering, where the priest would sprinkle it on the altar. The flesh was eaten the same day, and it was eaten by the priest as well as the offerer. Some interesting things about this peace offering, peace and fellowship offering. Again, the peace fellowship offering is kind of like sharing a meal with God. The priest was able to get some of the animal. God, through the sacrifice, took some of the animal, and then even the offer themselves were able to participate in eating the animal. So everyone involved were able to partake in this animal sacrifice and have a meal. So this is what's really interesting is the right thigh is given to the priest. It's called the heave offering. So what is heave? Heave means to raise up. So that's like raising it up like this. Okay, and that's the right thigh of the animal. The breast was also given to the, and that was given to the priest. The breast was also given to the priest, and that's called the wave offering. So what does the wave offering mean? It means to wave. Yeah. So if you're in England, the wave is like this. If you're in the United States, the wave's like this. And if you need some really help, the wave's like this. But I'm kind of guessing here, they heave it, they lift it up, and then what I read is the wave offering, they take it and they go like this with it. And so you're kind of waving at God that way by doing this, and you're presenting it or showing it to God, this breast. And so what that does is it's an acknowledgement that God provided that for them, the people. So it's very interesting when you read this. See wave offering, heave offering, that's what it is, just taking the part of the animal and putting it up in the air and presenting it to God and maybe showing it to the other people around them. And that's their appreciation that, you know, God provided it. So again, the result of the peace or fellowship offering is a soothing aroma to God. So all three of these, assuming a soothing aroma to God, it's satisfaction to God. Okay, so now let's talk about New Testament understanding about these three. So the burnt offering, we could go through and spend the whole rest of the class on the symbolism, the foreshadow to Jesus, but I'm just going to pick out a few. And so in your own study, think about it, and I know you'll come up with more than just this. But in the burnt offering, remember, the entire animal was burned. Think about Jesus. He held nothing back. It was complete surrender to God. And so that kind of represents or a foreshadow of Jesus, the burnt offering foreshadowing Jesus. The other item that I mentioned was that two lambs per day were sacrificed on a continual fire. This ended when Jesus offered one sacrifice for all because he was the perfect sacrifice. So those are just a couple concepts about the burnt offering. Now let's go off to move on to the grain offering, and let me read 1 Corinthians 15:20. Says, "But now Christ has been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who were asleep." So he died, but then he was the first one to be risen. We talk about the grain offering as an offering of the first fruits. And so this is, again, a foreshadow of Jesus. We talked about no leaven. That represents leaven in the Bible means corruption, impurity, and basically no leaven here for the sacrifice. So that represents that Jesus was perfect, pure, had no sin. The other item that we talked about in the grain offering is that it was composed of fine flour. Okay, so today we sift flour. in certain recipes. In those days, their flour was lumpy, it had insects, it had plant matter in it, a lot of impurities. And here it says fine flour. So they had to take it and probably do what we would do today and put it through some type of screen to sift all that out. And that represents it being pure and perfect. And that's Jesus and his sacrifice. And then the salt that we mentioned represents that, again, it's a preservative. It could represent that, you know, again, that Jesus never changes. He's consistent, he's constant, he's perfect all the time. Again, these are just a few thoughts. This isn't everything. We can spend the whole hour. So what I, again, encourage you to look on your own and come up with your own ideas about what these offerings, how they represent or foreshadow Jesus. Lastly, we'll talk about the peace and fellowship offering. And so Ephesians 2:14. Ephesians 2:14. It says, "For he himself is our peace, who made both groups into one and broke down the barrier of the dividing wall." We're talking about the Jews and the Gentiles, and we're talking about the veil of the temple between the holy place and the holy of holies. So Jesus, it says right here, is our peace. And so, again, the peace offering foreshadowed to Jesus here. The other thing is the Lord's Supper. The Christians invited to feast every Sunday on the body of the Lamb of God. So we're invited, you know, to participate in a meal with God. You know, not only remember the sacrifice and what he did for us, but also we're sharing a meal with God. So that's kind of like the peace or fellowship offering. Just another way to think about it. And then also, blood was sprinkled on the altar during these offerings, and that could represent, you know, the blood of Jesus, of the new covenant. Okay, so now here's the other question that I need to discuss. I think the most important is, again, these three sacrifices provided an aroma pleasing to God. So let's look at Ephesians 5:2. Ephesians 5:2, "And walk in love just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma." So Ephesians here, Paul is referencing these sacrifices. Again, another foreshadow to Jesus. And so then another thing that we need to consider is, the next book, Philippians 4:18. Let's take a look at this one. Philippians 4:18. "But I have received everything in full and have an abundance. I am amply supplied, having received from Epaphroditus that you have sent a fragrant aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God." So this is Paul, and what he's saying is the church here in Philippi provided gifts to him at various times and provided his needs, and things that he didn't even ask for, they were providing for him. And so he's saying that their sacrifice to him, providing these things, was accepted to God as a pleasing aroma. Again, talking about these sacrifices, putting it into their language where they would understand. So it's just interesting how these sacrifices get referenced throughout the New Testament. But I think one that we really need to look at is Romans chapter 12, verse 1. Okay, Romans 12, 1. "Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present yourselves, your bodies, as a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship." Okay, and also Paul in chapter 15 says, "I die daily." We're also supposed to take up our cross daily. So we are a living sacrifice. It's continual. very much like the burnt sacrifice that was, the fire was burning all the time, the lamb in the morning, the lamb at night. And again, all three of these was to have a soothing aroma to God. So the question I have here today is, what aroma are you emitting? What aroma are you emitting? Is it soothing, and is it pleasing to God? So that's some deep thought that you need to answer for yourself. So you can think about these sacrifices. You can think about your daily living sacrifice and what type of aroma that you might be producing. Any questions on this? Yeah. Romans 12:1, Philippians 4:18, Ephesians 5:2, and Paul says, "I die daily," in 1 Corinthians 15:31. Okay, so that's it for those three sacrifices. Any discussion or questions, comments? Yeah, Jody. Yes. Keeping it preserved. And that's in which verse or which chapter? Matthew 5:13. Jody's talking about the salt and that it's a preservative and it important part of this equation, yeah. We could go on and on here. I mean, there's just tremendous, the details here. But we're going to have to, I'm sorry, but we're going to have to move on. So Florence asked a really good question last week, and I told her that I would do some more research on it, and I did. And the question was, did women and widows make sacrifices? Okay. So I didn't have to go far. I just went back 1 week in our notes, and I found the answer there. In Leviticus chapter 12, we've read this a couple times, actually. Leviticus chapter 12, 6 and 7. It says, "When the days of her purification are completed, for a son or for a daughter, she shall bring to the priest at the doorway of the tent of meeting a one-year-old lamb for a burnt offering and a pigeon or turtle dove for a sin offering. Then he shall offer it before the Lord and make atonement for her and shall be cleansed from the flow of blood. This is the law for her who bears a child, whether a male or a female." So based on childbirth, the woman had to provide an offering. So this is a prime example. I did want to point out that in this case, in verse 6, the burnt offering was first, followed by the sin offering. That's the reverse of what we're going to talk about coming up later today. But I think it's because the lady did not sin by having birth. This is natural, part of life. And so the sin offering we talked about was because it was blood was involved, and so it's very critical. But the sin offering was second because she didn't sin by having a baby. The other thing was, if you think about Romans 3:23, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God," all includes women. We're going to talk about sin offering coming up today, and so that tells me sin, women sin too. Therefore, they need to have an offering for sin offering. So, and also, if we're going to read this later, but I'll read it right now while it's fresh in our mind. Leviticus chapter 4, verse 27. This is talking about the sin offering. It says, "Now if any one of the common people sins unintentionally in doing any of the things that the Lord has commanded not to be done and becomes guilty." Okay, and then it goes on, but it's talking about in verse 4, It's talking about the sin offering. And so common people, we're not talking just man, not talking just a woman, we're talking about all the people. So this is another example. And then the last one, I had some help, but I got it from this book here called The Book of Numbers by Doty. And it's found in Numbers chapter 6. And what's interesting, I went to the library here, borrowed the book, and inside the cover it says, Harry Darrow, August 1973. So thank you, Harry, for making your books available so we can better understand God. And so I used that book there, as well as the Bible. And if you turn to Numbers 6, we find another specific example of women and sacrifices. And so Numbers 6 is talking about the law of the Nazarites. And so what this means is someone would voluntarily dedicate themselves to God. It literally means to be separated, separate, or have a special service to God. Essentially being set apart as holy. That's what this meant. What I read was that it has a time frame. Typically 30 days. I've read 60 days, 100 days. I've even read a lifetime. So it depends on the person and what they're trying to achieve for God's benefit. So in Numbers 6:2, it says, "Speak to the sons of Israel and say to them, when a man or woman makes a special vow, the vow of a Nazarite to dedicate himself to the Lord." So you can see it says a man or a woman. So in the Bible, we have no record of women that were Nazarites, but it was permissible based on this verse. But famous alumni of the Nazarites would be Samson, John the Baptist, and Samuel. We have records of the men. Verse 3, just to let you know a little bit, since we're talking about Nazarites, let's learn a little bit more about that. Verse 3, I just wanted to point out that even though verse 2 says a man or a woman, verse 3 and beyond, the pronouns are he, him, and his. And so this is very interesting to me. I studied a lot of pronouns this week, which not for my email, but for the Bible. And so it was very interesting that we would refer to men or woman, but we would always talk in the reference of he. And so in the previous sacrifices and that we'd already talked about, it was always he also. So just keep that in mind. I don't fully understand why, but that's just how it's written. So if anybody knows why, please share it with me. I'd like to understand that better. But verse 4 says that the Nazarite could not eat grapes or any grape derivatives, such as wine, raisins, anything with grapes. They could not have haircuts. You remember Samson? Couldn't cut the hair. That's what helped make him strong. The other thing is they could not touch dead persons, even be around a dead person, even within their own family. So very unique characteristics that they had to maintain. And then in verse 13 and 14, verse 2, we said men or women. And then in verse 13 and 14, when their time was complete, the 30 days, 60 days, 100 days, whatever their commitment was, verse 13 and 14, now this is the day of the Nazarite, when the days of his separation are fulfilled, he shall bring the offering to the doorway of the tent of meeting. He shall present his offering to the Lord, one male lamb, a year old, without defect for a burnt offering, and one ewe lamb, a year old, without defect for a sin offering, and one ram, without defect for a peace offering. So, what I want to point out there is, again, it says he all the time, and him, and his, but in verse 2, it also applies to women. So, and if a woman took this vow, or promise to God, then the woman would also have to provide the sacrifice. So I just wanted to show you, these are just some examples of women that were allowed, and required to do sacrifices. What else? I wanted to point out in verse 14 or verse 16 and 17, the order of the sacrifices, and we'll get into this. But what it says in 16, then the priest shall present them before the Lord and shall offer for his sin offering, and then a burnt offering, and then it goes on to the other two offerings, peace, fellowship, grain and meal offering. But the sin offering was always first because they had to have their relationship with God correct. They had to have their sins atoned for. Then the burnt offering was always second. So we're going to get more into this as we talk about the other offerings, but I just wanted to point that out. So that's what I found in my research this week. Women can sacrifice, and these were the examples. Any questions on women's sacrifices? And the other thing that I read about, and we talked about this, the animals were brought to the door of the tent or the tabernacle. The offerer put their hands on the animal and almost to leaning on it, basically transfer their sin to this animal. The animal, again, being totally innocent, which Jesus, right? And then the offerer is the one that took the knife and slit its throat. It wasn't the priest, it was the offerer. And we talked about that. And it was only the birds where the priest would actually snap the neck off the bird. So these women were pretty rugged in their day. But I think God conditioned them such that they could tolerate that and have the stomach to do it. Very different than our culture today. Yeah, we couldn't do this today. I mean, it would be very difficult. But I think their culture and the way God conditioned them, they could do this. So something to think about. So that's that one. Okay, so now what we can do is we can continue on. Let's see. So this is what we've talked about so far, the three. Okay, and now we're going to talk about sin offering. And so we're going to talk about the sin offering in Leviticus chapter 4, and then we're going to talk about the guilt offering in Leviticus chapter 5. So if you would turn over to Leviticus chapter 4. So the purpose of this is if a person sins unintentionally, it results in atonement. Atonement, the definition is, covers sin to restore the broken relationship between God and the Israelites. And these were animal sacrifices. Part was burned on the altar and part was burned outside the camp. The reason outside the camp is because this was a sin and just showed it being unclean. Remember, Jesus was killed outside the camp. Okay, the focal point was the disposition of the sacrificial blood and how it differed among these four categories. The principle was that this blood penetrated the tabernacle as far as the person could go, and the sin offering decontaminated the tabernacle to the point. So, it's a mouthful there. What it means is if the priest sinned, the priest could take blood all the way up to the Holy of Holies, or the holy place. If the congregation sinned, it would go to a certain place, the leader, and then the common person. It would go, and it was based on the tabernacle or the temple and how far they could, the blood would go based on how far the person could go to make them be atoned for their sins. So the first thing we want to talk about is the priest and the whole congregation. Let's go to Leviticus chapter 4, verses 1 through 12. So I think what we do is we just read it, and then we talk about it after that. There's a lot of detail here, and rather than me just summarize it, I think we just go to the Word of God and read it. This is a long passage. Do I have a volunteer that could read that? Leviticus 4, 1 through 12. Becky, thank you.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a soul shall sin through He shall bring the bullock unto the door of the tabernacle of congregation before the Lord, and shall lay his hand upon the bullock's head, and kill the bullock before the Lord. And the priest that is anointed shall take of the bullock's blood, and bring it into the tabernacle of the congregation. And the priest shall dip his finger in the blood, and sprinkle of the blood seven times before the Lord, before the veil of the sanctuary. And the priest shall put some of the blood upon the horns of the altar of sweet incense before the Lord, which is in the tabernacle of the congregation, and shall pour all the blood of the bullock at the bottom of the altar of the burnt offering, which is at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And he shall take off from it all the fat of the bullock for the sin offering, the fat that covereth the inwards, and all the fat that is upon the inwards, and the two kidneys, and the fat that is upon them, which is by the flesh. The caul above the liver, with the kidney, it shall he take away. As it was taken off from the bullock of the sacrifice of peace offering, and the priest shall burn them upon the altar of the burnt offering, and the skin of the bullock, and all his flesh, with his head, and with his legs, and with his inwards, and his dung. Even the whole bullock shall he carry forth without the camp into a clean place, where the ashes are poured out, and burn him on the fire, on the wood with fire. Where the ashes are poured out, shall he.
Okay. Thank you, Becky. Glad you're a health professional reading that one. A lot of parts and pieces there. So, again, this is for unintentional sin of the priest. The priest is a high-level person, you know, has a lot of impact on the Israelites. So because of that, the sin of the priest is, because of the impact that they play, the sin of the priest has to be atoned with the most expensive offering, which is a bull. And so as we go down in order here, the sacrifice animals will become less of lesser value. So notice that in verse 11 and 12 that the hide, the head, the legs, and the rest of the bull are burned outside the camp. Again, because it's a sin offering, being unclean represents also that, you know, Jesus was killed outside the camp. There's other, we won't go into this, but the red heifer was burned outside the camp, and maybe we'll talk about that later. The other thing is, in verses 5 and 7, blood was sprinkled seven times before the Lord in front of the veil of the sanctuary. Okay? So this is as far as the priest could go, up to the between the holy place and the Holy of Holies. That's the veil. Some blood was put on the altar of fragrant incense also. So the blood was brought to the border of the Holy of Holies, provides the seriousness of the sin. Because now God's supposed to be once a year in that holy place, the Holy of Holies, on the Day of Atonement. We'll talk about that later. And so you're getting closer and closer within the temple or the tabernacle to where God resides. Okay, and so and the priest being able to go that far in, the blood goes to that point, and also the most expensive. Sacrifice. Yes. Yeah, on the Day of Atonement. Yep. Yep. Seven was a God's number. Yeah. Yeah. Good point. That's true. So this is about the priest and unintentional sin. Anyone, that's all I had for that. It's pretty straightforward, I think. Any other comments on that? Okay, then let's go to the, go ahead, Becky.
Well, did the priest have their own livestock?
So the priest, yeah, that's a good question. The priest did the service of the priest, as the priest, whether they were farmers and lives, ranchers. I don't know.
They were given land to grow crops on.
Okay.
They livestock. They didn't want to go in. At least when they beat, they defeated enemies and all that. Livestock was brought in, was broken up between the people and the priests. Some of the livestock was given to the priests. Reading those other passages, assumes they must have had animals and been able to farm some of the land.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your. Thank you for your knowledge there. Appreciate it. You heard that, Becky? Okay. All right. So let's go on to the whole congregation. So that's found in Leviticus chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. Verse 13. Now, if the whole congregation of Israel commits error and the matter escapes the notice of the assembly, and they commit any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, and they become guilty, when the sin which they have committed becomes known, then the assembly shall offer a bull of the herd for a sin offering and bring it to the tent of meeting. So again, this is unintentional sin. You see that it's a bull because I think it's representing many, many people, not just one person. And so it's in verse 20 of chapter 4, verse 20, he shall do with the bull just as he did with the bull of the sin offering, thus he shall do with it. So the priest shall make atonement for them, and they will be forgiven. Then he is to bring out the bull to a place outside the camp and burn it as he burned the first bull. It is the sin offering for the assembly. So very similar to what the priest did, but they don't go into the holy, you know, the veil between the holy and the holy of holies. But still, a bull, and they burned a lot of it outside the camp. So again, that's if the entire congregation, all the Israelite people, unintentionally sin. Let's move on to the leader. That's in verse chapter 4, verses 22 through 26. A leader here would be considered a political leader or an elder within the congregation. That would be the definition of the leader. So let's read 22 through 26. When a leader sins and unintentionally does any one of all the things which the Lord of his God has commanded not to be done, and he becomes guilty, if his sin which he has committed is made known to him, he shall bring to for his offering a goat, a male without defect. He shall lay his hands on the head of the male goat and slay it in the place where they slay the burnt offering before the Lord. It is a sin offering. Then the priest, he is to take some of the blood of the sin offering with his finger and put it on the horns of the altar of burnt offering, and the rest of its blood he shall pour at the base of the altar of burnt offering, and its fat he shall offer up in the smoke on the altar, as in the case of the fat of the sacrifice of peace offerings. Thus the priest shall make atonement for him in regard to his sin, and he will be forgiven. So again, the leader has a lesser animal, which is a male goat, instead of the bull like the priest. And the purpose is atonement and forgiveness of sin. And they burn the fat like the other offerings. And notice it doesn't go as far. It doesn't go as far into the temple. It's just at the altar of the burnt sacrifices. In this one, the priest could eat the meat. Eaten in a holy place. Verse 26, it says, all the fat he shall offer up in the smoke of the altar, in the case of the fat, the sacrifice of the peace offerings, thus the priest shall make atonement for him. I already read that. Verse 29 through 30, he shall lay his hand on the head of the sin offering and slay the the sin offering at the place of the burnt offering, the priest shall take some of the blood with his finger, put on the horns of the altar. Doesn't look like I'm reading the right one. Yeah.
It's not the
same. Yeah, so looks like I have my verses mixed up here. But the priest could eat the meat. It had to be eaten in a holy place, which was the tabernacle courtyard. He could not do this for the sin offering of the priests and the whole congregation. That meat was totally consumed. And the reason is because the blood went to the holy place. So let's talk about the common person. That's verse 27 and 28. We read this one earlier. If anyone from the common people sins unintentionally in doing any of the things which the Lord has commanded not to be done, becomes guilty. 28, if his sin which he has committed is made known to him, he shall bring for his offering a goat, a female without defects for his sin which he has committed. So notice it's a goat, but now a female, which again is lower in price, lower in value. And then verse 32, but if he brings a lamb at his offering for a sin offering, he shall bring a female without defect. Again, a female, lesser value. And this is for the common person. So it's identical to the leader, but we're dealing with female animals. Again, perfect, no defects, less costly. All right, take a look. So we've got that. That we talked about all that. When we presented in conjunction with the other offerings, this is the pecking order of the offerings. The sin offering always preceded the other offerings, except for the purification of the birth of a child. Sin offering was performed first to restore the offer to God. Sin must be atoned for prior to communion with God. So if we look at, and that's found in Leviticus chapter 9. Leviticus 9:15. through 18. Then he presented the people's offering and took the goat for the sin offering. So the sin offering is the first one, which was for the people, and slaughtered it and offered it for sin like the first. He also presented the burnt offering, the second one, and offered it according to the ordinance. Next, he presented the grain offering, the third one, and filled his hand with some of it and offered it up in smoke on the altar besides the burnt offering in the morning. Then he slaughtered the ox and the ram and the sacrifice of the peace offerings, which was for the people. And Aaron's sons handed the blood to him, and he sprinkled it around the altar. So that gives us the order of the offerings. Again, the sin offering to restore the relationship and have atonement for sins. Then the burnt offering to create a soothing aroma to God. The entire animal was consumed, given to God except for the hide. The grain or meal, drink offering given to God, and the priest could take a portion of it. And then the peace offering, again, basically a fellowship or sharing a meal with God. The priest, the offerer, as well as God, all got a portion of that animal. So hopefully, now that we understand the definitions of these, now we can read this part and we can understand the order and why the order is such. So that's what we were leading up to here. And again, all of this represents Jesus, the perfect sacrifice. Okay. That's it. That's all we're going to get to today. The next one we'll have to do next time is the guilt offering. And then after that, we can move on to the priest. What was their role? We keep reading about the priest with leprosy, the offerings. And we can understand what does the priest do. And we're going to talk about the high priest. Then we're going to talk about the Day of Atonement. And again, How does this fit in with Jesus and what he means to us today? That's the whole point. Okay? All right. Thank you.